All right, over the last few weeks here on Off the Ball, we've been teaming up with Healthy Ireland to bring you Let's Get Set. It is a how-to series helping you to lead a healthier lifestyle. You can get it on any of our social channels now, and you'll see a series of short videos. They're only a minute or two long that are just giving you a couple of quick tips that can help you towards a healthier lifestyle based around nutrition and sleep and forming healthy habits. And if you want more information and some more easy to follow advice, you can see gov.ie/let's-get-set. And to maybe go a little bit deeper on it this evening as well, I'm joined by a panel of experts who you can watch on our social channels. I'm joined in studio by Ian Power, who's the CEO of spunout.ie. Good to see you, Ian.
Good to see you.
And on the line as well, Noreen Roach, who is a registered dietitian, and also Nora Stapleton, former rugby player and now women in sport lead at Sport Ireland. Good to talk to you, Nora and Noreen.
Hi, Nathan. How are you?
We'll go into the various different elements that you've been talking about on the online series. But Nora, I guess the key point that seems to keep coming up, whether it is around sleep, around fitness, around nutrition, is around building healthy habits and getting into a routine. And for people listening in this evening, or more importantly right now, myself listening in as well, building those healthy habits and getting started and not putting it off till Monday, and I'll do it next week, and I'll have the weekend, I'll have one final go at it, and next Monday I'm going to turn my life around. I'm guessing that's not the way to approach it.
Oh, definitely not, isn't it not? And I think like one of my tips that I kind of gave during the series was sometimes later becomes never, because that is something that I remind myself of all the time. I think a key thing here is habits are things that we do subconsciously, and routines take planning, effort, conscious decision making. And that's why they are that, you know, that's why exercise is that little bit harder to get into. But it's all about starting as soon as you have that thought of, I want to be more active. So what are the little small things you can do? So start planning then. Okay, where can I develop those routines into my day to day? What does my day look like? Instead of driving in the morning, the kids to crèche or school, can I turn that into a walk or a cycle? At lunchtime, can I be active there? So it's really starting to look at your day and what can you add in? Can you use the likes of YouTube, for example, if you're doing a HIIT session at home at lunchtime? Do you build it into your work calendar? I mean, that's one thing that I started doing, where my lunchtime has run in, or it has walk in, or it has something like that, which just encourages me to see it when I'm working during the day and I go, all right, yeah, that's me, I need to get out and about.
My sense would be that at the start of the first lockdown, Nora, that people got into a lot of very good habits. They suddenly found themselves with that little bit more free time. Not everything was an organized sporting or recreational activity, that they just had to go out for a walk or just go out for a run. But as we've got back to more normality again, that probably people got into those bad habits quite quickly. And whereas you would have gone for a walk around the block at lunchtime, now you're sitting on your desk and you're checking your emails and you're having your lunch on your desk, that it can be very easy to slip back into those bad habits again.
Yeah, it definitely can. And I think that's where the likes of your goals comes in, or your, you know, what is it that motivates you? So certainly looking at things like, you know, if I join a program, for example, or something that is bringing me on a pathway to an end result, the likes of your couch to 5Ks, somebody who thinks, I can't run the length of myself, how am I ever going to go for a jog at lunchtime? But those types of programs that are on offer across your local sports partnerships or out of your local gyms and places like that, they are so helpful for just kind of re-engaging you, taking you through those small step-by-step processes, which will help you build that habit back into your day-to-day. So I think certainly looking at your goals, even look and see, you know, who can you link up with? Because exercising with somebody, you know, holds you accountable. Even those days where you're feeling tired, you're feeling lazy, you just, the weather's useless outside. By having somebody, knowing that they're going to arrive in 5 or 10 minutes at the door to go for a walk or to go for a run, or knowing that you have to meet them somewhere and you don't want to let them down. So it's really good to have somebody to exercise with.
You mentioned goal setting there. How important is that to set yourself a target? Because I guess you need to be reasonable as well. As you said, a couch to 5K can be brilliant because it builds it up over the course of 7-8 weeks and there's a great sense of achievement at the end of it. But maybe going to the couch to 10K straight away can actually feel like it's too big. That actually having that sort of balance, and I guess being at the different stages of your life as well, there's a big difference between your goal setting at 25 and 45. Are the resources there to help people along that actually setting realistic goals?
Yeah, 100% there are, and you're totally right. And, you know, difference in people's ability levels and maybe their mobility as well, for example. So I mentioned the local sports partnerships already, but they have programs that suit older adults that are inclusive programs. They have teenage girls programs. They've got men on the move. So there really is something there that like anybody can feel comfortable in joining, knowing that they can be a complete beginner and not feel out of place. Because I think, isn't that like what we all hate? You're all worried about showing up and looking too unfit, or you don't have the right gear or anything like that. But like these programs do exist. There's a local sports partnership in every single county. And they're there to help. They're really friendly when you pick up the phone. So I think it is, there's a little bit of bravery there for that first step of going, right, I really want to do this. There's a small bit of research that it sometimes takes, okay? But that's why we're saying it does take a little bit of planning. You are trying to create these routines, but the end goal is huge. And, you know, we've had some fantastic stories. We have a Women on Wednesday story series that we run, and you've got the likes of Marion, who has young kids, like typical mother, you know, you're bringing up your own kids, you're so focused on yourself, you let your exercise go, you know, the routine has slipped, and suddenly you realize, I'm overweight, I can't even run around with the kids, I don't want them to see me like this. And she started walking with her teenage daughter, her daughter was in her 30s. Her daughter decided then, right, Mom, we're going to run the last 100 meters, and she hated her for it, okay? She really did, but her daughter kept pushing her. They ran the last 100, then they ran the last 200 meters, and then the daughter was like, come on, we'll try and find something to do. And she's an example of someone who did the couch to 5k, who never thought that she could put one foot in front of the other, never mind finishing a 5k, and now she's gone on to half marathons, and she's in her late 50s, I think. So it really is, from, you know, everybody can start from scratch and nobody is too old. I think that's the key message.
Noreen, as a registered dietitian, you've been giving advice on our social channels over the last few weeks on healthy eating. I think we all remember back to school and the basic food pyramid. It does feel that there have been huge advances over the last few years in terms of nutrition, in terms of education. Is the food pyramid exactly as it was when I was in school 30 years ago?
Well, I was going to ask you how long ago was that, but anyway, there we go.
Primary school, that was.
Of course. So, yeah, it's changed a little bit. I suppose the principles are the same. And I think you're so right. We all have heard of the food pyramid, I think. And, you know, sometimes there is a bit of eye rolling, like, okay, here we go. It's the same messages, which is true because, you know, it's a really good template and baseline. And it's evidence-based, which is the really important thing, because there's so much non-evidence-based nutrition messages out there. So the food pyramid still, I love it. I think it still remains the exact mainstay and cornerstone of how to construct a healthy diet, because, you know, there is loads out there. I think people can complicated a little bit and make, you know, in your head it becomes, oh my God, where do I start? What do I do? So the food pyramid is there. I suppose the main change in the latest one a couple of years ago that was launched is that the lower shelf is now the fruit and veg, my favorite shelf, fruit and veg. And that has now become the lowest shelf in recognition of the value of those foods. And a little bit like Nora was saying, I think, you know, when you're coming to a starting point about what will I do, how will I make my diet healthier, that's a really good place to start, by making even a very specific goal, by saying, I think in one of the videos where I was talking about, you know, 5 to 7 portions of fruit, number one, sounds like a lot. If you're not eating any fruit or veg, or you're only eating one portion.
So what's a portion?
About even, well, this is the thing, a portion is easy enough to achieve. So it's one piece of fruit, like an apple, a banana, an orange. It's about 10 grapes, you know, 8 strawberries. It's actually a cup of vegetables. It's really easy to achieve it. Like, it sounds difficult, 150 mils of juice. And one of the things that we can do is just say, right, I'm going to increase, you know, if it's 2 portions I have at the moment, I'm going to have 3 tomorrow or start for the next week. And it's fruit or veg, it doesn't matter. So you have, you know, a half a cup of veg at the moment, that's a portion. You've got an apple, you've got a banana, a few grapes. So it's just, you know, they're small enough portions, I think it's really achievable. And that's a really good place to start. So, you know, making specific goals. And it is, you know, that forms a habit then over time. So that's a really good place to start. We've loads of different benefits, and different fruits and different veg give different nutrient intakes, which have really powerful impact and effect on everything that we do, whether it's sleep, performance, and just our daily goals. And I think the other thing around the food pyramid and the whole area of healthy eating is it does apply to everybody. So I think, you know, sometimes people associate healthy eating with somebody who might need to lose a little bit of weight, or, you know, whether it's a smaller or a large amount of weight. But I don't think it's about that. I think for everybody, there is probably changes they can make to just make their intake healthier so they feel better. So I think it's important for people to understand that as well, that it's not always. Some people, yeah, and we know it in the last year and a half or whatever with COVID, we have seen an increase in weight gain. But I think it's really important message to get across that healthy eating is for everybody. So, you know, the fruit and veg, the changing from white carbohydrates to high fiber, whole grain, whole meal, etc. The benefits we have in gut health, like there's a whole host of things that actually will benefit just our physiological systems, if you like, and help us to achieve a really good, I suppose, and healthy lifestyle. So I think that's an important message as well. And as I said, the food pyramid then for everybody, you adjust the amount. So that's also the beauty of it. You know, if you're somebody who doesn't do a huge amount of activity, there are specific guidelines or goals, particularly with the carbohydrate foods, the second shelf of whole grains, which we know carbohydrates are the main fuel for exercise and sport. So, but for people who are not that active, then they stay on the lower end of the scale. So it's 3 to 5 servings. It'll be 7 for teenagers, but are very active people, older males. But, you know, you can adjust it accordingly. So that's important as well, to use it in that way. So you can, you know, make sure if you're very physically active, you up the amounts of those foods. If you're not, so then you keep them at a lower level, but still aiming to get in really important nutrients like fiber and calcium and all the different nutrients, protein, etc. So, as I said, it's a really good template.
So when people are looking at the food pyramid, they need to look at themselves, and I guess a 15-year-old, a 35-year-old, a 55-year-old should be looking at and using the food pyramid in a different way.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, the portions, you know, when you take, we'll say that, you know, one section of the population, it's classified as, so it's 19 to 50, and then it's 50 upwards. So you can work out based on your age, male or female, and your level of activity, where you need to be sitting in terms of the portions you need, the amounts. And, you know, the other thing is it's very accessible to find the food pyramid. It's obviously on Healthy Ireland and on all the HSE eating well and healthy guidelines. And the portions are all outlined. And that's a really good starting point to find it in the first place. And then whether you print it off or you have it on your phone, etc., and you can see really clearly what the servings are. Because I think that sometimes, like you asked me, what is a portion of fruit and veg? You know, so we talk this language about portions and size and calories. You know, this is how many calories you need, this is how much carbs you need, etc. But it really does help people to see exactly how much of everything they need to do. And, you know, it helps to add variety as well, because you can mix and match and you can look at, you know, your day-to-day intake. And as we're talking about habits, it's to build it in and make sure it becomes a good regular habit and routine. So, you know, as I said, you have X amount of fruit and veg a day, you change and eat more fiber. If you don't get in your calcium, there's loads of suggestions on it for your calcium intakes, iron, protein, etc. So it's easy enough. And I suppose what I didn't mention yet was the other slight difference in the food pyramid is that on the very top now, it's got what we call the unhealthy foods. So they're foods that we all probably like, but we don't need them. So they're sitting in the very top of the pyramid, the kind of high fat, salt and sugary foods. And I suppose the point to say is they're in the pyramid, but on the very top, it's sort of a separate standalone shelf, but we don't need them. And, you know, recent research has shown that a large number of the population eat these foods on a regular basis, sometimes up to 6 times per day. Now, what we're saying is you need them, you don't need them, but you could have the maximum once or twice in the week. So, you know, I think that's something to look at for everybody as well. I think if you say an outright, you can't have them at all, they're really bad for you. Yeah. We all need a treat. We all need a pick me up. But again, if you're somebody who eats, you know, the packet of crisps and a chocolate bar and a chocolate biscuit, you know, 3 times or 4 times a day, cut that back, even if it's once a day, you know, and slowly reduce it over your weekly intake. And to make goals like that is important too. So I suppose there's a lot of the construction of a good diet is by including healthy foods, like we've talked about. But there is also obviously the overarching issue where we're eating too much of bad foods that just don't give us any benefit. Well, except the taste and that moment of pleasure. But that's kind of yeah, exactly. So you know, they taste great, and yeah, they're there, and we love them. But just try and think about those as well, and say, God, am I eating actually like 6 chocolate biscuits with my cup of tea as opposed to 1? You know, so it's just about making those kind of small changes. And I guess the other thing is sometimes food diaries, writing stuff down is really good because, you know, we don't know half the time how much you've actually eaten or what you've eaten in a day. And there's all sorts of apps now as well where you can record what you're eating. Now, it's not, I think it's important not to obsess about it. But, you know, even
that,
if you're
Noreen,
looking...
And the language, because I guess, I'm sure you see it a lot, the language moves very quickly from healthy eating to dieting. And how obsessive should people be when it comes to trying to change their diet and moving towards healthy eating and looking at ingredients and obsessing over what exactly is in every little thing that they eat?
Yeah, and I think it's really important to get the balance right. And it's not easy sometimes because you have all of us talking about how to do it and what to eat. But I think there again, looking at your food pyramid and whole foods and just trying to get the balance of those right. But I think, if you know, most people will have an idea if they're doing, you know, well or not. And that's where sometimes it's good just to, you know, keep track, keep a food diary, write stuff down. Because you know, probably if I asked you and said, you know, how much fruit did you eat yesterday, or how much fluid did you drink, or how much fiber would you have got in? It's really hard to kind of remember. So as a starting point, it might be, you know, a good idea just to write, keep an intake diary for a day or two and just see where you're at. And then, you know, agree with yourself, I suppose, to make those changes, small ones, and maybe 1 or 2, you know, and do it week by week. But you know, so it's important that you know what you're doing and what you need to change. But on that notion as well, around all of the, we have lots of great information and labels and ingredients and all that. Like we can tell a lot about from labels now about what's in food and what's good for us. But sometimes that's getting into a lot of detail that's not, you don't really need. So I think it depends on your starting point and it depends on where you are with food. And some people love that detail, but not everybody needs it. So I think, again, it's starting with your simple steps specific around those types of foods you identify, you know, in as the ones that you don't want to either, that you want to increase. And then there's the ones that you want to cut out as well. But it's about, you know, having a good relationship and, you know, enjoying your food. I think what we sometimes forget too around the good things are, food's a really social thing, isn't it? You know, especially now, I think we appreciate more than ever the value and the benefit, and I suppose almost the joy of being able to meet, even to meet people for coffee and whatever, or tea, or and a piece of fruit now, as opposed to nice big
and a croissant cake
that I love. Yeah, but you know, so it is important, and you know, we just need to get the balance right. So you know, on that again, making sure it's only a couple of times a week rather than, you know, 5 or 6 times a day that we're actually eating the bad foods that aren't giving us any benefits, and then you know, looking at the overall day for everything else to get in.
I often wonder, is Keane almost venting frustrations on behalf of his friend in that regard? I don't want to say he's got a blind spot to Solskjaer, but he's another former teammate who hasn't exactly kind of criticised him.
Subscribe now to the OTB Football Podcast stream wherever you get your podcasts, and download the OTB Sports app.
Ian Power is in studio with me, and you've been doing a short series on sleep, but you're also the CEO of SpunOut.ie, so you're dealing a lot with 16 to 25 year olds, 16 to 34 year olds. Before we get on to sleep, what you're seeing about people in that generation of their relationship with food and exercise, my opinion from the outside would be that they look fitter, healthier, seem to have a better understanding of nutrition, far greater than, say, my generation did. But on the other side, then, there's the Instagram generation and the toxicity that can go with that. Is there a balance? Do we look too much at that Instagram generation and focus too much on the downside? Or is your sense that actually that 16 to 25, 34 age group have a really good sense around fitness and nutrition and its importance?
Yeah, I mean, I think they've never had more information at their fingertips, you know, so there's a lot more educated young people out there understanding, you know, what Noreen was talking about in terms of just getting a good balanced diet. I think there's guys and girls around the country who are playing GAA at the weekend, and they know that actually if I don't take care of myself physically from a nutrition perspective, that I'm not going to be able to perform as well at the weekend, or, you know, they just want to feel good. I think that's probably the thing that stitches everything together. You know, Nora was talking about exercise, and, you know, a little bit of intense exercise every day helps you to feel good. Eating well, there's really good studies that show that actually good gut health is really good for reducing your risk of anxiety and depression, which is wild. You know, we don't ever think about those things. So, yeah, I mean, I think there's the other side of it where, you know, there's a huge amount of pressure on young people to look a certain way. And, you know, social media plays a huge role in that. But, you know, no more maybe than magazines used to for girls. I think the issue now is that it's affecting boys, and it's affecting boys really significantly. I think we're seeing a lot more boys talking to us about issues to do with body image, feeling like they need to have that six pack that other people on who are posting things on social media.
Is all
media
that coming from social media?
I don't think it's all coming from social media. I think it's a thing that's just come up in terms of image generally, and I think it's really easy to kind of blame social media for everything. As I said, it was there before, it was part of culture, but I think it's just become a lot more, there's been a lot more focus on it over the last number of years. And I think what's interesting about social media as well is that it can be really affecting for people who are already vulnerable. So people who might be, you know, who might have obsessive kind of patterns and who might kind of fall down that trap of obsessing too much. Whereas the research kind of shows that if you kind of have a healthy enough relationship with your self-esteem and things like that, then it doesn't really play a huge role in impacting. So I think it's a bit of a mixture. I think young people have a lot more information. They understand the benefits of eating healthy and what it can do. And then on the other side, then there's that pressure that is placed upon young people from seeing other things. And again, you see all these creators and stuff like that on social media who look great. You know, you don't see that maybe they're doing that full time, and they have the space and time to you know, build those routines and focus so much on the numbers, as you were talking about, on labels and things like that.
There has been a huge amount of progress then around fitness and nutrition. With sleep, has there been a lot more education about the importance of, like, is it still get the 8 hours, go to bed in a regular time? Is that still the same message that's been put out?
It's still the same. I think there's a lot more information about sleep hygiene out there. I think sleep hygiene is probably a term that's new to lots of people over the last few years, you know, thinking about things like, you know, often you might think to have a coffee in the afternoon or something for the mid-afternoon slump, when actually really caffeine after 2 o'clock in the afternoon tends to really affect your ability to fall asleep later in the evening. You know, things like screens, you know, we're obviously glued to them, and then, you know, the light from the screen can actually really affect the quality of your sleep, which not a lot of people knew until quite recently. But yeah, I mean, the solid advice that's always been there, and the National Sleep Foundation in the US have done a huge amount of research into, like, you know, what age, you know, what amount of sleep you should be getting at what age. And, you know, for adolescents, you know, they should be getting a lot of sleep because their bodies are still growing. When we get older, you know, we don't need as much sleep, which means we kind of sleep a little bit less. But there's loads of standard quality advice that's out there that I think is still relevant today. I think our patterns are slightly changing as well. If you think about things like TV, you know, you used to watch things that were prime time, and you go to bed afterwards because there's nothing else on that was any good. It was probably a crap Western or something. Now we just have Netflix, which means we can roll on to the next episode of Selling Sunset until we're blue in the face. So, you know, you kind of at 2 a.m. in the morning, you're still watching something.
And that must be a huge issue for adolescents in particular, because everyone remembers being a teenager and you can't get them out of bed and all of that. But that's still fine. But now, instead of going to bed at midnight, they're on their phones, they're on the iPads, they're watching Netflix till 3 a.m.
Absolutely. And I think it's a real conscious decision, you know, so it's, you know, it needs to be a real conscious decision about when you go to sleep, because there's so many things that are there that can distract you, that can help you to kind of stay up past, you know, kind of what is a bedtime that will get you enough sleep before you need to be up for work or school or college or whatever it is the next day. So, you know, you need to have your eye on what it is am I going to be doing tomorrow, and how am I going to fit in that 8 or 9 hours or whatever it is that you need.
How do you figure out what you need?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's based on how you feel, really. I mean, I think it's a bit of, like everything, it's kind of a bit of tried and tested. So for some people, you know, 7 hours will do them and they'll feel rested the following morning. Some people need 9 hours in order to not feel groggy. You know yourself when you wake up whether you feel like you've had a good night's sleep or not. And I think there's a connection between sleep quality and obviously sleep duration as well. So things that are going to affect your sleep quality, you need to keep an eye on, because maybe that's what's making you feel groggy when you wake up, or otherwise it's potentially the fact that you've not actually got enough sleep. And I think what's often misunderstood as well is about how much a lack of sleep can affect your mood and your mental well-being. I think that's where we would come from mostly about this, is that you know, it has a huge, insomnia has a huge link to issues around mental health. And as well, you know, there's a huge amount of research out there as well that, you know, between the twilight hours, as you might call them, whatever they are for you, kind of normally kind of midnight to three or whatever, if you're not sleeping and you have issues going on and you're kind of rolling around thoughts in your head and there's no one else up in the house to talk them through with, or there's nobody you can be texting and things like that, it can end up in a situation where you're spiraling. And, you know, so going to sleep earlier in the evening and trying to do that where possible helps to kind of arrest that type of thinking as well, which is really important.
And what about smartwatches? Because my sense would be actually they're a huge help in terms of tracking your sleep, that actually sometimes you say, I'm not feeling great, and you look and go, I had 5 hours, 40 minutes sleep. It does make sense. But they can also put a pressure on people, maybe more with step counts and things like that. But it does seem from a sleep point of view, they can be very beneficial.
Yeah, I mean, just like anything, you know, I wouldn't put all of my eggs in one basket, and they're not going to be the silver bullet or the panacea. They're not going to do it for you, but they're really helpful. And like Noreen was talking about in terms of food diaries, you can't really assess a problem until you have the data and you understand what's going on. And it's very hard for me and you to remember how much sleep we got last Sunday night. So having that kind of objective tool there to be able to look back on it and see, well, actually, what's the pattern been like? What's my routine like at the moment? And what do I need to do to change to kind of get it to a more healthier habit and healthier routine?
This entire series, Let's Get Start, is a how-to series about creating better habits. Before we wrap up then, if you had 30 seconds to give one key message about building a healthy habit, Nora, what would it be?
Mine would be start now, because sometimes later becomes never, and start looking at each day of your week where you can add in exercise routines, whether it's active travel or a new exercise class that you're going to join. But start now, because later becomes never sometimes.
Noreen?
Probably very similar. I guess that is absolutely start now. Make those small changes. Don't be sort of overwhelmed by all the different things and portion sizes and calories. So as I mentioned already, get the fruit in, hydration, drink an extra couple of glasses of water a day as well. And the other thing, which I didn't mention to add in finally, is learn to cook, you know, learn a few basic recipes, get really incorporate that into your daily activities, whether it's with your kids, whether if you're an adult or a teenager, you started yourself. It'll really help you to understand and enjoy food as well, and use really, you know, good foods, good ingredients, whole foods, and enjoy.
JP, our producer, has assured me this wasn't an intervention on my life from my family, but I've picked up a huge amount of good information over the last half an hour or so. Ian, on sleep, 30 seconds.
I think it's just start simple, like everything else, you know, so it maybe not to jump straight into a new routine, but to think about, you know, tracking it, as you said, kind of taking note of when it is you're going to sleep, maybe taking a note of how you feel in the morning when you wake up, and what were the factors that led to that night's sleep, whether it was good or bad, and then think about making a change and just try to get, you know, try to understand how much sleep you need and make sure that you get it every night. It's starting simple.
You can watch all the videos that have been put together on all our social channels. We have teamed up with Healthy Ireland to bring you Let's Get Set, a how-to series helping you to lead a healthier lifestyle. For more information and easy to follow advice, see gov.ie/Let's Get Set. Ian, Noreen, Nora, thanks a lot for joining us.
No problem. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.